Femi Elawafuruja Jr. is an actor and director. In 1997, he founded theatre company Teatro Fohosdi, which focused on work rooted in African heritage. He's currently directing a revival of the award-winning play Blue Orange at the Arcola, and he's here at Teatro Fohosdi headquarters to talk to me, Amadeep Sohi, for Theatre Voice. Hi Femi, how are you?
I'm really well.
Good, good. You're currently in rehearsals for the play, right?
Yeah, technical rehearsals now, considering we finished rehearsals last week.
Right.
Over the weekend, uh-huh. Saturday. 4 weeks intense rehearsals.
How did they go?
Well, I would say it was a voyage of discovery for all of us, because the play, for me, has been the bedrock of what I would term modern classical writing in Britain at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
But because there has been some sort of a yardstick which had been set in stone 10 years ago when the play originally premiered at the National Theatre, I had a daunting task, especially with the new sort of vision that I had for the play and its recalibration, gender-wise, etc. And so it has been a huge, huge voyage of discovery, and I could tell you all about it.
Good. For those who aren't familiar with the play, can you give us a synopsis?
A synopsis, without
giving
detonating,
too much away.
Yeah. Because you have to go and buy the book or come and see the play. Essentially, the play focuses on a young female black patient, mental health patient, who has been picked up off the streets, Shepherd's Bush Market, for acting funny.
Right.
And so she's sectioned under the Mental Health Act, Section 2, which is a minimum of 28 days. In fact, it's a maximum of 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
And during her incarceration, she claims to her junior doctor, the junior registrar who is looking after her, who has been sort of assigned to her, that her father is the eponymous African dictator Idi Amin.
Right.
With this, and with other delusions and hallucinations and beguiling escapades, which are told and relived within the ward, the junior doctor becomes rather worried that she is not ready to be released on the 28th day at the end of her treatment. And is of the opinion, medical expert opinion, according to her, that she needed to be retained for a further 6 months, which is a Section 3. However, she would need to convince her betters,
right,
the senior consultants. The senior consultant comes along and spends some time with the patient and is of a completely different opinion, that this patient's ready for release and that her time has actually come to an end. And she has plausible reasons for the reasons for her delusions and hallucinations and her fruit colour blindness, which obviously is the title of the play.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the play then becomes, the scene is set for a boxing match, a verbal boxing match between a dogged, highly professionally ethical junior doctor who is inexperienced and is a rookie, and a highly experienced senior consultant who's intelligently fierce and intelligently frivolous, but quite well rooted in her experience to have the Ottoman opinion that the patient's ready to go.
The play was originally written by Joe Pennell and was originally staged at the National Theatre in 2000. What prompted the decision to revive it?
Well, the play has enjoyed several revivals in the regions since 2000, but it has never been seen in a major way in any of our key flagship theatres in London for that length of time. I met the writer Joe Pennell in 2003 at the Royal Court, and I told him that I saw the original production and how much I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him why it hadn't been revived since, and he was, you know, as enthused to see his own play revisited on the London stage. But I particularly was very, very much of the opinion that I love the play so much that I would do anything. I'll give my right arm to revive it if I had the right resources and if I had the right vision.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, knowing Joe was easy, meeting Joe while I was associating in the same building seemed like a very, very great sort of nexus to that ambition. Several years later, a couple of years ago, in fact, I worked on his crime thriller for the BBC, Moses Jones, but as an actor.
Right.
And this was several years on from that initial meeting, and I asked him again, has he thought of, you know, infusing interest in other people in reviving that play in London?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, do I want to do it? And I said, yeah, most definitely. And I, in fact, all the very many things that I didn't have then in 2003 were falling into place for me now.
Right.
And he said, what take would you have on it if I was to do it? And I said, really, really? I would really love to change the gender and see the play from a completely different perspective, a fresher perspective, but keeping the original terms of the plays in place, because obviously it was very important that if there were going to be any changes whatsoever done to the play, that the central theme and the central kind of hallmarks of the play were intact.
Mm-hmm.
And that time came several months ago when we went into pre-production and Joe and I met up to do some really minor recuperation of the text.
So he's worked with you on it?
Yeah, I would say that without Joe, the ability to convey the overall ethos and impact of this vision for the play would have been pretty futile, to say the least.
Okay, and you've said that you've decided to use an all-female cast this time. Do you think that the issues of race and madness differ according to gender? Because those are central themes of the play, right?
Well, I would say now that with the issue of race and madness being assumed as the theme of the play, there is a slight dispute that that is the case, in the sense that when Joe wrote the play, I think people, I think most people saw the play as Joe's response to the underwhelming response of the National Health Service to the mental health system. But actually, I think what Joe found was an incredible vehicle to talk about a completely different metaphor, which is the power struggle between professional intellects and professional ethical service providers. So I haven't really concentrated on the race madness theme as being the overall super objective of the play. I think what's more interesting for us to focus upon is how power, ambition, career, class are easily transferable across gender as a point of discussion, which I think makes the play a more easily accessible, universal piece of work to appreciate. Hence, the switch in the gender. When Joe wrote the play, and the play was received for the first time 10 years ago, because of the male focus, because of the names of the characters, because of the machismo sort of aggressive overtones that the play exuded, people were locked into this stigmatization of the play being of one sort of gender appreciated experience.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, actually, if you change the names, and if you kind of tweaked some of the very, very recognisable male nuances within the play, what you then have, what's left is a fully recalibrated universal play, which is non-gender specific. And I think that's a very interesting focus to kind of target or focus on, as opposed to race and madness.
Okay. So instead of showing that there's a different kind of power struggle with females, you're basically saying that it's more general than that. It's between it's, people.
It is, because women can do hauntiness and they can do arrogance more easily than men, you know, and women can be very ambitious, you know, in their career aspirations. And that in itself has been a very interesting point of focus for me as a man working with three women. And the rehearsals have been very resourceful for me therapeutically in understanding actually that some of the cultural assumptions and some of the gender assumptions that one has made as a man, that those are open to discussions, because there were things that I took for granted from a male point of view, which my actors were telling me to really hold on, sit back and appreciate the experience from their point of view. Emotionally, for example, we are talking about a play which is highly strung on that kinetic energy of ambition and power and dogmatic professional ethics warring against dogmatic professional intelligence, and the world of academia is laid open for all of us to appreciate. And my actors are telling me, well, actually, when you put all of those things into a cauldron, they are tempered by virtue of the fact that they're women emotionally, and we could never ever approach the same themes and the same issues and the same nuances in the same way that men do. And so some of the things that I'm pushing my actors to accelerate towards, mm-hmm. I'm told to temper and hold back and go, look, take your time, family, because actually, as women, we do things differently. So it's been a huge wake-up call for
me. It sounds like it's been an interesting experience.
Well, the process has been pretty full-on, you know. And as a theatre director, I'm often told how much of a firecracker I am, or a wild cannon in the rehearsal room, because I am, I'm not proud of this, but I'm often told that I'm often accelerating my tools, who are the actors, towards their intentions in a way that they could never take a rest and take a step back and think about what they're doing before they actually find the sense to manifest their intentions. And I often say to them, well, actually, a lot of it is about instant recall, a lot of it is about instant impulses, a lot of it's about reflex, a lot of it is about finding the true sort of harmonic synergy within a room, and it hasn't anything to do with some of the cerebral stuff we read about how drama and how theatre is achieved. I tend to throw the academia of theatre conventions out of the window when I approach my work.
Right.
Sometimes I hit it bang on the head, and sometimes I get it wrong. And in this case, I've been asked to really take it easy and approach the work from a kind of piecemeal point of view, as opposed to a broad, general...
Who's asked you to do that?
I think the room.
Everyone's been speaking to you.
I'm talking about the people around me. I'm working with some new artists, some new actors. I'm renowned also for working with a particular set of actors. You know, I have what I call my talisman around me. You know, actors who I know are trusting my work ethos, and they connect quite easily with my working methods and understand my mindset and my theatrical vocabulary. They for me are my surety of getting work done. And over the last couple of years, what I've tried to do is I've tried to step outside that comfort zone, and I've tried to diversify by working with new artists who could give me some new disciplines and could open my eyes to a new way of creating stories and creating theatre. And definitely this has to be the biggest yardstick, or I would say the biggest example of how much I have moved in intellectually mm-hmm. as an artist by virtue of working on this play and working with women, you know, a core, a very tight triumvirate of actors mm. who breathe, sleep, wake up in the same way.
Right. Just going back to the play, you mentioned that it deals with mental illness within the NHS and how it's dealt with. Do you think that that's changed in the last decade? And did you have to conduct any research into that?
Well, yeah. I think things have changed. I think 10 years ago, when the play was originally written, I think mental health, or the mental health segment of the National Health Service, was very much on the forefront of our papers. I mean, very much in the media eye. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of controversy over the overrepresentation of black men within the mental health service. And by virtue of the Stephen Lawrence inquiry, which happened 7 years before, which was conducted 7 years before, after the death of Stephen Lawrence in mm-hmm. 1993, the whole concept of institutionalized racism literally spread right through the country mm-hmm. across various stratas, across various organizations, the police force, obviously, first, theatre, Eclipse Theatre emerged out of that, combating racism, and of course the National Health. And the task force was set up round about the time, soon after Blue Orange was written and produced. And I'm not claiming that Blue Orange accelerated that strategy, mm-hmm. but this task force was set up to police the number of outrageous stats which were stacking up in against the favour of the black community. And I would say up to 5 years ago, I think there was a steady sort of increase in monitoring numbers, because those numbers were increasing only because of cultural assumptions, mm-hmm. stigmatization, stereotypical, you know, sort of preconceptions, etc. And I think there was a decline in those numbers. But at the same time, we were aware of the fact, well, my understanding is that one had to put political correctness to one side mm-hmm. and let that place, you know, its role and the task force and the strategies and all the focus groups who were there, who were concerned about increasing numbers, but also we needed to reconcentrate on another strand, which was actually dealing with the epidemic. In 2010, 5 years after that particular study, research has shown that 4 in 1 people in the UK are mentally unstable, and 2 in 1, and there's a 2-to-1 ratio of those figures falling out of favour with the black community. And there seems to be an equilibrium of black women and black men now within the system who are service users. Mm. There is a fear that the new government, the coalition, are going to debunk the strategies mm-hmm. because apparently, according to some of the focus groups, the government have gone silent on that monitoring of overrepresentation of black people within the system, and that the figures are going to escalate, and that we're going to have a bit of a problem in mental health trusts, wards, and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. The other thing to point out is that what has been incredibly useful for our sort of background research has been the visits that we've made to some of these psychiatric wards. And
Is that you and the cast?
Yeah, myself and the cast. Right. My assistant director, we had wonderful opportunities of visiting, which I'm not going to name for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been really insightful because we've been able to connect. I mean, for me, my idea of presenting this production is completely different from the ideas that were originally presented 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that 10 years ago it was a very stylized production where the physical infrastructure of the world that the characters were inhabiting were suggested, and right. they were suggested in a kind of very, very minimalistic, intelligible way. And I've now gone for the complete antithesis of that. I've gone for a very naturalistic set,
right.
where the characters are inhabited within, or inhabiting a ward, and a consultation room within the ward. And so the real incarceration is felt by the characters, particularly the young female patient who the story evolves around. But the visit, going back to my point, the visit that we made to the hospital, what that instructed me was a very, very authentic sort of understanding of what the texture of the environment gave me and my team to connect with. The actors were able to stand amongst service users and their service providers, their consultants and their doctors and ward managers, and actually observe mannerisms, how managers and the consultants and the doctors were very ardent in trying to break down the stereotypical kind of understanding that we came into the ward with.
Mm-hmm.
So we were constantly told, they won't harm you, you know. And I went in with this whole notion of a very busy environment, sound, being chaotic, frantic movement, physical gestures which were uncontrollable. All those notions were just broken down on that visit. And that's been very, very helpful in me cultivating an authentic choreography of these characters within the space that we are inhabiting at the Arcola.
Oh, great. So it was quite an eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
Completely. And the original production won the Olivier Award for Best Play, the Critics Circle Award for Best Play, and the Evening Standard Award for Best Play. Has the fact that it was so successful added more pressure to you for this production?
Yes.
So put simply, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, I say, what's that adage? If it isn't broke, why try and fix it?
Mm.
You know, that kind of thing. Well, to be honest, it's there as a marker, isn't it? As
mm-hmm.
as a benchmark of excellence, those kind of reviews and response to the play. And it was 10 years ago, and of course, one would never ever forget those absolutely riveting performances by Bill Nighy, Andrew Lincoln, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's a production which actually brought him out of obscurity and
mm-hmm.
launched him onto the road of success that he's on now. I'm happy for that to be my warning in a way, and the stake that one would have to live up to. I think the central ambition is to actually give it new life, as I said earlier on, new audiences, an opportunity to encounter the play for the first time and to make up their minds about what the themes and how our vision connects with them, if it's universal and relevant for them. That's our super objective from the very, very beginning. But we would want it to be successful because actually Joe's writing is completely and utterly inspiring to listen to. He's very intelligent, he's very funny, he's given these characters a sphere of life that some of us could relate to, and we see ourselves on stage and we laugh at it, and we, it provokes thought. A masterpiece of writing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And rare are those kind of plays today in the British Theatre. And if it's just for that, if it's just to illuminate the writer's sheer excellence, then I think we have done as successfully as the original production, I would say, obtained.
Good. I look forward to seeing it. I never got around to seeing the original production, so it'd be interesting to see first time over.
And you're looking at me with a very kind of knowing eye there going, it better be good, Femi.
It's the critic in me.
Oh, you're reviewing the play.
I will be reviewing the
play. Goodness me. Here we go. This is why it all went wrong, darlings.
Right, moving on to you. You were artistic director of Theater for Hosdy until earlier this year. Is that right?
Yeah.
What was the reasoning behind you setting up the company?
This company was set up 13 years ago. It was my 1967. It was my 10th year working in theatre as an actor. I had been given an opportunity to train as a director a couple of years before setting up the company under Philip Headley, mm-hmm, at the Theatre of Stratford East, which I did. And while under Philip's tutelage, mm-hmm, I had the opportunity to actually sit back and look at the ecology of British theatre as it stood then. And it was pretty dismal, mm-hmm, especially within the sector. I was very much interested in seeing black work succeed,
mm-hmm,
and black work being pushed into the prominence. And there was, in 97, I would say there were a plethora of black theatre companies working and existing and thriving. But there weren't enough opportunities and companies focusing work on the African experience. Black theatre in the mid-90s, beyond the mid-90s, going backwards, was arguably of a huge Caribbean persuasion. And African theatre was negligible or literally relegated to the grassroots communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined as a second-generation Nigerian living in Britain to redress that balance. And hence the kind of strides and move that I put into place to form a company that will sort of push the African theatre experience in Britain into the mainstream. It's taken me 13 years to get close to doing that.
So what changes did you see over those years, and has it changed significantly?
Sadly, yes.
Why sadly?
Well, as I pointed out, when I started off my career as a theatre practitioner, I was living within a hyperbolic bubble of vast cultural diverse theatre experiences. And there were fabulous companies out there.
Mm.
Timber, Black Theatre Co-op, Strange Fruit, Carib Theatre. There was a company called Double Edge, which just astounded every sort of preconception of what black theatre could be about. It was very bold, it was very brave. There was Talawa,
mm-hmm,
Tara Arts, Yellow Earth kind of started around about the same time as Théâtre Français. The Tamasha was going.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a rich time. We're talking about an incredible point in British theatre history.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened over the years, funding, gatekeepers, governance, policy, those companies have eroded. You know, there's a slow decline, dearth, dissipation, really, and invisibility of those companies today, or companies of that like working and progressing today in modern Britain. The very few that are around, you can name them on one hand, to be perfectly honest with you. And the significant ones are Talawa, Nitro, formerly Black Theatre Co-op. Tara is around, but only just.
Mm-hmm.
There is Tamasha, and there's Yellow Earth, and there's Théâtre Français. That's 13 years after, you know, the big boom.
So it's time for another revolution.
Well, I tell you what, I've taken off my gumboots and I took them off in April, and I really do feel that the little I have done may have changed the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
But the future is promising.
Do you think it's
the
because
the future is bright?
Perhaps there are more roles available in the mainstream, that there are now fewer companies.
When you say roles, what do you mean?
Roles for actors and...
There are many more, are you saying? Well, for actors, yeah. For actors. I think the casting blind initiative, which was kind of... which emerged after a lot of the stuff that we talked about earlier, the institutionalised racism,
mm-hmm.
you know, overtures in combating racism in theatre, you know. I mean, those overtures were huge back in the early 90s, into the mid-90s, right into the noughties, right? Those overtures came in various form, but it was just a... it was almost like a fad, you know. It was a big sort of response to the apathetical nature that policymakers and theatre managers and board of governors and artistic directors were marinating in, you know. And so there was a big sort of slap round on the wrist,
mm-hmm.
by the government and by the Arts Council, and all sorts of things emerged out of that, and people were finding it very kind of sexy to cast a black Viola in Twelfth Night, or you know, those kind of but those are good. I'm not knocking it. Those are very, very good sort of experimental, ticking the box kind of things,
mm-hmm.
you know. But in actual fact, what then began to happen was an awakenness, you know, of the consciousness, and the critical mass of the ecology of theatre began to change, and so black actors became more prominent. There were more black actors coming out to drama schools.
Mm-hmm.
There were more black theatre directors given more sort of opportunities. There were more writers of colour writing stories and empowering actors,
mm-hmm.
to come forward. There were more initiatives by the Arts Council. We had Brit, we had Eclipse. What else did we have? We now have Eclipse Theatre, which is this great initiative by the Arts Council to ensure that key regional theatre buildings across the country were really holding up that flag of cultural diversity,
mm-hmm.
and ensuring that the big black minority ethnic experiences were seen on the bigger middle scale to large scale sort of theatre stages. But of course, that's all in context of a particular sort of rush of enthusiasm to meet a particular ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, what we're all trying to achieve, and what I've been trying to achieve with Théâtre Français, and there are small focus groups, there are individual artists, there are other companies trying to achieve the same thing, which is to ensure that their work is appreciated by an all-inclusive British audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with targeting a particular sect or a particular cultural group and ensuring that they feel connected. Of course, that's important.
Mm.
But I think the importance and the relevance of the work encompassing universality and a universal appreciation, especially within the mainstream, is the one point that we all need to get to.
Mm.
And so we're a theatre company. We're not a black theatre company. We're a theatre company.
Yeah.
We're a company that produces theatre. You know, and that's what we want to be judged upon.
Great.
I sound like a soldier.
So what prompted your decision to leave your post at Teatr Polski?
Good question. I don't... Yeah, no, actually, it's a good question, but I get asked this question a lot. 13 years is a long time.
Mm.
13 years is a long time of trying to serve a particular service provision. I had a mandate, I had a mission statement to try and pulverize the bubble and prick it with a very small pin so it can burst, and the artists and the writers and the theatre practitioners that the company were and the audiences that we were serving could emerge and benefit from the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
appreciated by the mainstream, and that's that ambition has been solely defined by a specific remit, which is to concentrate on African theatre and the African theatre experiences for those living at home and abroad. And I felt that I had done that. I'd really, in my own way, I had fulfilled that mission.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it started to get a bit perverse,
to
be honest with you, because I'm from West Africa,
mm-hmm.
originally, and my parents are from Nigeria. The wealth of our experience and the wealth of the work that was coming out of the company was predominantly prejudiced by that sensibility, and so I wasn't after the 12th year, I realised that actually. You know, what the company requires, because it is Teatr Polski, it's a company which is solely designed and was formed to ensure that there is an overall appreciation of the continent as opposed to one quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was best for me to step down and give another person another opportunity to take the company to another level. And so there are other areas of the continent which will be explored, and also I'm an old man. I feel like my magic wand, you know, the power within it was waning,
yeah.
and it needed just a younger, fresh blood to mm-hmm. come in and shake the company up and take it to another level, international level, for example,
yeah.
and to be able to penetrate some of the bigger companies that I was unable to do. And I think what I did was just to, you know, for me as well, it was to liberate my sense of development, and I could step away from the company and pursue a freelance career where other sort of genre of work were open to me to approach. I'd love to do a musical. I'd love to do an opera. You know, I'd love to tell stories within a completely cultural construct. I'd love to do an Ibsen. I'd love to do Shakespeare. I'd love to do I'm doing a Joe Pennell now, but I'd love to do a Lucy Prebble,
yeah.
you know. I think the world is my oyster in terms of other genres, mm-hmm. and in a way, with Teatr Polski having given me and I've solely remained on one knee, giving props to the company for giving me the opportunities that I have sort of engendered over the last 13 years, and they have equipped me with the tools that I'm using now to do the job that I'm doing. But I think stepping away gives me an opportunity to diversify,
mm.
and also to empower someone coming from behind or across to take up the post.
And what's next for you after the run of Blue Orange at the Akola?
What am I doing next? Well, literally, we open on Friday, we preview from tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and on Saturday I can then concentrate on my second BBC radio play,
right.
which I haven't written, but I'm producing and directing. Or I should say I'm directing, but producing at the same time. I have an executive producer, Toby Swift, who's making that all happen. And that's been crucial, actually, because this has taken quite a bit of my creative active time. But Rex Urbano's play for Radio 4 is the next thing I'm doing. That's the most immediate thing in front of me.
Great. Well, it was lovely talking to you, Femi. Thank you for taking your time out. I know how busy you are at the moment with Blue Orange. And good luck with it. I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.